There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, hour number two of Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all, another live hour, and I'm fresh off the Met Gala, but I got back here in time to do the show, which is good, and back here in time to hear about our governor getting put in Facebook jail. This is, we talked about at the beginning of last hour, and my buddy John Sharp from AL.com coming on in just a second, but yeah, so this is a Facebook unpublished a post from Governor Ivey's reelection campaign. Let's get accurate. I'm saying, okay, they said your page has been unpublished, okay? So I don't know if that, so this is Governor Ivey's reelection campaign, her on the governor page still up, but her reelection campaign, you know how a lot of times if you look through social media, Facebook or Twitter or elsewhere, they'll have a, like, you know, somebody who is elected, they'll have the page for being the governor or the senator or the member of the House of Representatives, and then they'll have the other page for Congress, for Senate, for governor, where they do, so they kind of keep them separate, right? Because you have more political and campaigning going on one. The other one's for, like, official business. Okay. So, yeah, Facebook has unpublished a post from Governor Ivey's reelection campaign claiming the post went against their community standards. Just a second here. So the governor and governor says on Twitter earlier here, Facebook banned my campaign page this morning. We fought back and won. Evidently, they're upset that I am standing in the way of President Biden to protect Alabamians from this outrageous overreach by the federal government. Okay? That gets the page unpublished. Can we quickly take a tour through Facebook and see what's cool with Facebook right now? And that what gets you? I think Facebook has stepped in it too, because this is not... This from a PR angle, I would be jumping for joy. If I was working in Governor Kay Ivey's reelection office, in her campaign office, I would be like, y'all, this is the best day ever. The political capital from this will be huge. And don't you know what this will look like when it comes up in news reports this evening? That the governor of the state of Alabama, who has not been, Governor Ivey has not been a thorn in the side. She shouldn't make a big story nationally, right? I mean, she has no habit on her Twitter feed or Facebook of throwing jabs at the administration, right? But they, and you'll say, well, why the administration? It's Facebook. I told y'all like months ago in that conversation that came up in Jen Psaki in that press conference, like, oh, no, we don't tell Facebook what to do. Yeah, they do. She said, well, we don't tell them what to do. I think the quote, I'm paraphrasing here, Jen Psaki said, well, the administration will just make Facebook and other social media platforms aware of what people are putting on their social media platforms. Now, why would the administration be making Facebook aware of what's happening on their platform if they didn't want something to happen because of it? Come on. So the post, which has now been republished, was critical of the mask mandate component of President Joe Biden's COVID-19 remarks last week. It was the, where the Governor Ivey said she would stand like a bull, you know, to protect Alabama. And she's going on to say this. Here's Facebook banned my campaign this morning. Bah, 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 bah. If big tech thinks they can silence us and that I won't fight back, then, honey, they haven't met me. They have another thing coming. Can somebody cue up the Judas Priest for me? I'm not backing down. I never will. We're fighting Washington. We'll fight big tech, too. So that is the latest from Governor Ivey, who is now, at least her campaign page, is in Facebook jail. So there we go. This is the best thing that could happen just from a political side, the best thing that could happen to the governor, I think. I don't know. I'll get some savvy insight from my buddy, John Sharp from AL.com. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good. Take off your journalist cap for a second, which I think is welded to your head. But if you were working in that office, would you think that would be like the best thing that you could have seen in the news?
Exactly. I do. I agree with you. And the reason why, keep this in mind as well, is that there's supposed to be an announcement at some point this week from Tim James.
Yeah, I think tomorrow he's having a presser.
Yeah, tomorrow up at Montgomery. And arguably, he is considered probably, if you look at some of the folks that are contemplating running for governor, he would be considered probably her fiercest competition, I guess, in the primary. And so, when you have an issue that the base really attracts to, which is, censorship and social media, I agree. The timing couldn't be better for the governor for her campaign to come out really hit on this particular issue.
Let's we talk about this issue and this vaccine. A federal executive action moving OSHA to require businesses over 100 to have their people vaccinated or have weekly tests, right? So that discussion that the governor's pushing back on. The other side of that is one of your stories over at AL.com right now I'm reading is about the city of Mobile. And I saw the memo from the city. They're not forcing anybody, but they are incentivizing, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I thought the timing was interesting as well, because it was about a month or so ago I asked the city, are you planning, you have this ARP money out there, are you planning on doing a vaccine mandate? And the governor raised the question because cities like Fairhope and Foley had moved forward with their own mandates, or not mandates, but their incentive programs. And there's, I believe, some cities in the northern part of the state have done the same. And the idea is to try and prop up the percentages of employees are getting vaccinated. In particular, you have public safety employees. And some of these departments are at 50% or below with full vaccination. And so I think the idea was to try and get some of the employees that are out there working, face-to-face, encountering the public on a frequent basis to see if they can push them to get vaccinated. And at the time, the city had not addressed that in their ARP plan. I mean, that ARP plan, the American Rescue Plan, a fund plan had been debated and discussed quite extensively over at Government Plaza for several months this summer. But ultimately what they approved was kind of what the city council called as a blueprint. He basically approved it and handed it back to the administration and said, this is kind of the blueprint we'd like to see you go by, but you're the administration. How's this money going to be utilized? And, for city employees, they receive about a $5,000 bonus, and on top of that, they are going to get an extra $100 if they're vaccinated. So that all came out yesterday in a press release. Both after the fact that the city council voted on the blueprint for the American Rescue Fund Act for the city, and after other cities have done vaccine incentives. And after, the president basically laid out a mandate. So, it kind of comes after the fact on a lot of those things. But, it's an extra bonus for city employees. And there's about 2,000 full-time city employees that are eligible, 2,200, I believe. And so that's kind of where things are at right now. So if you're a city employee, you have this opportunity to make an extra $100.
Let me call my shot on this one, John. Okay, here's my call. That the people that get it retroactively that have already got the vaccine, they're all going to cash in. You'd be dumb not to. All right, get your $100. Now, the people left there, and this is just where, and maybe I'll be proven wrong on it. I just don't think that number is enough. And you're talking about other cities with 500. But, if somebody's gone this long and not gotten the vaccine, I don't know that $100 – I'm not trying to down them for what they're doing, but I just don't think $100 makes a difference. I just don't.
Yeah, I think you raise a reasonable question. I do though. There's a Eastern Shore Toyota's got quite an incentive plan right now that if you go get vaccinated, you can put your name in the hat and potentially win $1,000. I mean that's a pretty good little incentive. And if you're in your 20s, that's in your and we've seen some of the vaccine hesitant or younger folks that are. I think they're invincible. So could that be the potential incentive for them to go out and get vaccinated. And that was kind of the thinking there from, I believe, from the folks over at Eastern Shore Toyota who still have that incentive program going. So, yeah, there's various incentives going on. It's not just the public sector, but the private sector has done a few things as well. So, yeah, those programs are still going on, even though, you know, there's been some recent changes from the White House and with regards to their stance on vaccine mandates.
You're talking about bonuses here, as well as you mentioned the city of Mobile. Let's talk about bonuses for the schools, you know, for teachers in Alabama. I think it was yesterday, the day before, I heard Jeff had Senator Arthur Orr on. He was talking about a couple different things. He was talking about the tax cut idea, but he went on to say, well, we're getting ready to do this this raise for teach. And I don't, Lord knows, I know we step in it here, if it's raise or bonus. I know there's a difference in why they care about the semantics on it. But he mentioned it yesterday, and then I see your story here, that Alabama school districts district dishes out another teacher bonus, you know, will others follow suit? So who's giving the money, and are other school systems not, I mean, is it school system by school system, how this works? How's it applied?
Yeah, exactly. It's and these decisions are being made by your individual school boards. And what happened was on September 2nd, the Baldwin County School Board voted unanimously to give full-time staff members a $500 bonus. There are a lot of folks over there that are eligible for that, about 3,900 full-time active employees. So it's a one-time boost. It's very similar to what we saw late last year before Christmas. We called them, I think we in the media called it Christmas bonuses, when in fact they were really called extraordinary compensation, which AKA is a bonus. It was a one-time payout to a lot of school, you know, a lot of school systems received this federal money through the CARES Act that was voted on back in March of 2020, and the school systems received this money. They utilized a good portion of that money to provide these one-time compensation boosts to their teachers and staff as kind of like a thank you bonus during, you know, for really their schedules were turned upside down. You know, teaching remotely, teaching in a COVID world, it was a difficult time period. But here we go, here we are in the fall of 2021, and you know, teachers and staff are dealing with the Delta variant, and it's posing all different kind of challenges. And so there are some schools that are closing them down around the state, but Baldwin County is yet to close a school. And Superintendent Eddie Tyler said that's his main goal here. He doesn't want to close any schools down. You know, he and the school board felt that, you know, the timing was appropriate to give the school teachers a bonus. And he felt that, employees are doing a good job, you know, kind of maneuvering around this issue, the Delta variant, and that's just the school board's decision. They voted unanimously to adopt this bonus. Now, you know, I talked to a representative with the Alabama Education Association in Baldwin County, and of course, they're very appreciative of the bonus, and they're not going to turn it down. And by the way, these bonuses that were approved, this latest round of bonuses approved in Baldwin County are local funds, not federal funds.
Okay.
Coming out of the local budget. And back talking to the representative of the AEA here in Baldwin County, she indicated to me that, they'd also like to see Baldwin County consider extended sick pay leave, which would be 10 days in addition on sick pay that would be provided to folks that are test positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, that's the one that makes sense to me.
Some school districts are doing this around the state. It's not uncommon, but it's something that's being discussed in Baldwin County, though nothing has been approved on that yet.
Yeah, as I see, you know, as money's been spent with different federal packages, and I lament sometimes, I think it's kind of hurrying to spend money without thinking of all the things. One that would make sense to me would be this. If you're going to require, right, you're going to require somebody to quarantine, and they got a job that they can't do remotely, whatever, that seems like an allocation of the money versus saying, hey, you have to quarantine, but it has to come out of your own time, right? That's a place where I go, that might be a place to apply that money.
That's the argument the AEA members.
It's not often I'm on their side, but I think I'm on their side on this one.
Well, yeah, their argument is that, well, you know, if we have to be quarantined for 10 days, that basically, that's all our sick pay or sick leave an entire year. So it puts puts a stress on teachers, on making a right decision there. But yeah, I mean that extended sick pay is being offered at some schools in the state, and I checked with two of them, and it's being utilized. Silicagua, for instance, 21 employees, I calculate about 7% of their staff have already taken this leave.
If you require them to stay home, right, and they're saying, I feel good enough I could work, but you're requiring them to stay home for quarantine reasons, I think there's an argument to be made there.
Yeah, so that's kind of what some schools, I mean, my understanding is about half the schools in the state provide this extended leave, and the other half do not. So it's really kind of split down the middle. And Baldwin County's discussing it, and it might come up at their school board meeting later this month. But yeah, it's an issue that's out there as well here.
All right, coming right back, more with John Sharp. We're going to talk about what happened at Mobile City Council today. It's budget time as we're looking through the budgets, of course, for the end of the fiscal year coming soon. What was the reaction like? Well, we'll get into that next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 125 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with my buddy John Sharp from AL.com. Today's Mobile City Council meeting. I was watching your feed on Twitter, and you said it was a little contentious here as they were talking about the budget for 2022.
Yeah, a little testy. Interesting allegiances being formed towards the end of their tenure on the council between Councilman Fred Richardson and Councilwoman Bess Rich. They both voted against the budget today. Councilwoman Rich wanted the several factions of the budget separated. Like, I wanted to vote on the general fund, different from the capital improvement fund, different from the convention fund. And she pitched that, but the majority of the council said, no, we're going to go ahead and vote on this all at once. There were some discussions about possibly delaying the budget vote for another week. That didn't go anywhere. So the council voted 4-2 on the budget today. They adopted the fiscal 2022 budget, but Councilwoman Rich had the strongest, she had the strongest comments during the council meeting. She felt that, the Stimson administration was setting aside too much in reserves and these so-called rainy day funds. And she felt that, there's a lot of needs that the city has from an operational standpoint. And that, while she also brought up the issue of the city's population declining. And she said, while annexation is something that, she supports, it certainly doesn't address crime, traffic, blight, et cetera, et cetera. She had some strong comments today at the council meeting. She would have liked to have the general fund broken out and dissected a little bit more. There were some questions raised as well about animal control in the city of Mobile. Its budget has been wrapped into the police department's budget, and there are some arguments that that lack transparency because, really, we don't know how much is being budgeted for animal control. I think the number of $1 million was tossed out there during a discussion, but if you go line item by line item, you really don't know. So that was brought up as well and debated. So it was an interesting council meeting, but at the end, the city council voted 4-2 on the budget. They're moving forward. I talked to Councilman Joel Days not too long ago, and I asked him, why did you vote on it today? Why not just hold it over for another week? Because Council President LeVon Manzi was not at the council meeting. He said, basically it was on the agenda. We felt that it was the right time to vote on it, and there's nothing more or less to it. And I asked him about the reserves, the arguments raised by Councilwoman Bess Rich on those. And he had indicated that, there's a lot of big projects. And, of course, he's not part of the administration. He's only speculating. But he thought, that there's a lot of big projects out there. Mobile has a civic center rehabilitation that they got to deal with at some point. They have the potential of building a new public safety complex. There's also Ladd Peebles Stadium out there, and then maybe whatever with Hank Aaron Stadium. So you got all these big projects out there, and that when you roll over a large reserve, that money could potentially be used on those certain developments. And I think there's also an interest of not taking out additional major debt going forward. They want to have the debt paid off and by around 2030. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at right now. But yeah, it was interesting, you know, some philosophical debates on how that you know, the city's money ought to be utilized.
There we go. I know we'll be talking about this more over the next couple months, and then, of course, with the new council coming up. John, before we wrap it up, congratulations, man, to the Hawkeyes. Just look at this, fifth in the AP. I don't know where I've been and been sleeping. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, we're excited. The Hawkeyes beat two ranked teams for the first time to start off a season since the 1960s. So, yeah, it's an exciting time to be a college football fan for me. That's my team. And their defense has been just lights out. I mean, it's fantastic. They got a lot of work to do on offense if they're wanting to sustain that ranking going forward. But I've been really enjoying the first 2 weeks of the season, and it's going to be a lot of fun going forward. We always talk about Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State and perhaps Wisconsin, the Big Ten. But, you know, Iowa's always been there. And this could potentially be a season where, you know, they sneak in and win 10 games, and we're talking about them later in the season.
Well, good luck. We'll be talking about it later in the season, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Sean. Thanks.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Check me on the text line, phone line, the talkback feature on the brand new app. The brand new app, by the way, is a time saver. And this kind of got me thinking about time savers. So I've talked to you in the past about the folks at Stamps.com, right? They bring the services of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS right to your computer. It's a must-have for any business. So if you're a small office like us sending out invoices, or you got a side hustle out there that you got to ship out orders, or you're just trying to figure out how to navigate your hybrid work life, Stamps.com can handle all that with ease. No wonder over 1 million businesses, just like us, choose Stamps.com for their mailing and shipping. Yeah, I was talking about this the other day, too. What's the best use of your time? If you're an entrepreneur, you're the person that does the thing that makes the company money, and you're going to get stamps. That's not making the company money. What if you have your most important employee there, they're out getting stamps when they should be doing that thing that makes your company money? Well, you're not making the money with it. Stamps.com lets you use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. And once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. It's that simple. And with Stamps.com, you'll get discounts up to 40% off post office rates and up to 66% off UPS shipping rates. Stop wasting time and go into the post office, and now go to Stamps.com. Instead, do what we do. There's no risk, and with my promo code Sean, my first name, you'll get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. So do this. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code Sean, S-E-A-N. That's Stamps.com, promo code Sean. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again. Right, before we get more update on the governor of our state being put in Facebook jail, we'll do that in a second. Some sad news coming out, and something Dalton and I were talking about during the news break. Both big fans of the comedy work of Norm MacDonald over the years. Norm MacDonald, one of those just incredibly funny people, of course, has a career that spanned back a long time ago. I mean, remember this? Let's go back to SNL days and Weekend Update.
In Massachusetts, the 119-acre Dunn Pond State Park has the state's first nature trail designed for the handicapped. Along the trail, you will find a rich variety of birds, lizards, and insects, all of them handicapped.
So, I don't know if you could tell that joke today. I don't know if that joke would be, if you get him shut down. But it's sad news today, and this is coming out just minutes ago. I don't even have the story. If you Google it, you don't even get the story. You have to go. Is it Deadline Hollywood you got it from?
Yeah, Deadline Hollywood, deadline.com. And they announced that, according to MacDonald's management firm, that Norm MacDonald passed away after a 9-year private battle with cancer.
Wow.
61 years old.
He was still doing stand-up, though, the last couple of years. I guess even while he was fighting cancer, he was still doing stand-up.
Yeah, he kept doing stand-up. I think he kept doing a podcast also and still making jokes, you know, all the way to the end. You know, how we were talking about Charlie Watts passing away, the drummer for the Rolling Stones. And he
Why does this always happen during the show?
I know. It's during midday, midday mobile. But how we said Charlie Watts was like the drummer's drummer.
Yes.
Norm Macdonald, I think, was the comedian's comedian.
And, yes,
and just listening,
I'll agree.
Listening to other comedians talk about him, he like appreciated bombing on stage.
There, something he seemed fearless to me. All, yeah. Like he never, like if you've ever done stand up or anything on a stage, I mean, the fear that goes into standing up there and hoping beyond hope somebody's going to laugh at you,
yeah.
or laugh with you. It did seem, I don't know if it was real, but Norm Macdonald seemed like he didn't give a stuff.
Yeah, he. It's almost like he wanted to bomb because that made it funnier in the long run. But yeah, very surprising news. So I guess he kept this private for 9 years, according to a Deadline. They said that Macdonald had been battling cancer for nearly a decade, but was determined to keep his health struggles private, away from family, friends, and fans. His friend and longtime producing partner Lori Jo Hoekstra said he was most proud of his comedy. He never wanted the diagnosis to affect the way the audience or any of his loved ones saw him. Norm was a pure comic. He once wrote that, quote, a joke should catch someone by surprise. It should never pander. She said he certainly never pandered. Norm will be missed terribly. Of course, I think most people probably know of Norm Macdonald from his time on SNL as the Weekend Update host. And then from there, he kind of got gigs as a Weekend Update host in different kind of manners. Right. I know he tried doing a sports show for a while, I think on Comedy Central, where he would do an update show. But yeah, Norm Macdonald, and he was, even though he didn't necessarily become a big movie star after SNL, like your Adam Sandler's and Jimmy Fallon's, he was in some Sandler movies, but he really just kind of kept grinding as a comedian.
Yeah, I'm looking at his movies here, quite a few. I don't know if they were, yeah, like you said, a lot of Sandler movies, but there's Dirty Work. He was in Billy Madison. Norm Macdonald, do stand up movie Grown Ups, Dr. Doolittle. Mm.
And I wouldn't say he was a good actor either.
I don't think he would have said he was a good actor.
When he was, Burt Reynolds during the Jeopardy skit.
Yes. Which, by the way, in the minutes we had during the news break, from this news broke to I was trying to get an audio clip, Dalton watched me. I had to go through because I have to make sure I can run that. I went through about 7 Norm Macdonald cuts on YouTube before I found one that I could air that wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, just last weekend, I was watching like a best of his podcast, you know, and he's so funny. He was, he would just claim racism when someone was being nowhere near racist in the podcast, and they would just completely. You know, most of them are also comedians and they got it. But
Norm would just say that's racist.
He'd say, oh, that's racist. That's I don't know why you're saying that. But he always cracked me up, Norm Macdonald. And I think I'm surprised. And this is a sad moment. Yeah. Somebody on the text line reminding us he got fired from SNL for telling O.J. Simpson jokes, I believe, back in the day.
What?
And he wasn't. Oh, I got to Google like those, you said, too. He didn't care. He was willing to cross the line there.
No, he would. He also strikes me. You're talking about where he stood in the pantheon of comedy. He's like part of the crew, like his friends, so I'm a big Bill Burr fan, stand-up comic. When I get the comic folks in here from Zoe City Comedy Festival and stuff, we'll talk comedy. I love stand-up comedy, so does Dalton. That's a thing that brings us together for sure. He would always, like, he has the best friends. He had the best friends. Like, yeah. The best comics out there were always talking about Norm Macdonald. Like, he was the, you know, like the most popular comic, and they'd be interviewing him, mm-hmm. and those guys would say, yeah, but I love Norm Macdonald.
Right, yeah. There was a comedy roundtable, or I guess it was a podcast I was listening to, and it was Joe Rogan and Bert Kreischer and some of the more popular comedians now. And they were going around telling their favorite Norm Macdonald jokes, and that just stuck with them forever. I guess I didn't realize the entirety of his career. So he started as a contestant on Star Search back in 1990.
Did he really?
Then he wrote for the sitcom Roseanne, 1992 and 1993. Then that was when his SNL career began.
I'll be darned.
And then after being fired or leaving SNL, the Norm Show came on from 1999 through 2001. And they said he did a one-season talk show for Netflix. Norm Macdonald has a show in 2018. but, of course, he made a plenty of appearances on some of the late night shows too, doing the 5 minutes of stand up that they would include there for a long time.
Yeah, and he would. I mean, he was doing. I was looking through. So he was doing coronavirus jokes and and all that stuff towards, you know. So I mean, this is. I don't know how they just says private battle with cancer. I don't know what kind of cancer did it say.
No, not that I've.
And that's not important. I mean, he's lost. But he was doing. I mean, that must have been within the last year and a half, and. And he was still doing stand-up.
Yeah.
And good for him.
They also say here he was kind of in the Weekend Update desk, a transition a bit from Chevy Chase and what they call the slapstick approach of Chevy Chase being the update anchor. And they said towards the more barbed political approach of his successor, Colin Quinn. So kind of a handoff in between there. But many people will tell you they felt that Norm was the best Weekend Update anchor. And at the same time, I think a lot of people would say, he was the worst Weekend Update anchor, and that just shows how he was kind of, you know, he didn't really care.
No, it depends on what kind you like. Yeah, good point. So the Chevy Chase, the stand-up, this stuff's funny. The older SNL stuff and Belushi and all that stuff's funny, but I liked the acerbic wit, you know, that you got with Norm Macdonald on that.
Yeah.
The pause, first of all, his comedy timing is like the best that's ever been. Comedy timing is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But he was, and I wonder if looking at it today, which SNL is a dumpster fire train wreck right now, that's why I don't watch it. I mean, it's not just, I'm not worried that my politics are going to be stepped on. I don't care, but just be funny about it. And they're not. They're so woke that they're not funny. Like, you can make fun of conservatives or Republicans or whatever. That's fine. I don't care. If it's funny, it's funny.
Right.
But I wonder if Michael Che, who gets on his high horse some, but Michael Che seems the closest to have that kind of Norm Macdonald nod.
Yeah.
You know, and is Michael Che still on there? I don't know. Is he?
I can't. To be honest with you, I don't even know. I think he's moved on since. Okay.
Well, Michael Che was the one that
Colin Jost, right?
Yeah, they were together. And Colin Jost was okay, but he's okay because he married Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson.
So his life's good. But Michael Che had a little, not a complete pantomime of it, but a little bit of that Norm Macdonald, just that, like, oh, I didn't see that coming, and zing.
Yeah, you know, some of the times it felt like Norm would have a punchline, and even the crew didn't get it. The people who who were being paid to be on SNL, just like Norm, and it would either take a few seconds for them to get the punchline, and at the same time, even if you don't get the punchline, you're like, this is supposed to be funny, right? Maybe I should be laughing right now. But Norm Macdonald, a comedian's comedian for sure.
There's somebody text here on this, a named texter, said Dennis Miller wasn't bad back then either. Big fan of Dennis Miller's. I thought he was very – that same kind of – but Dennis Miller almost more, and I'm a Dennis Miller fan, so let me say this. I'm a Dennis Miller fan, and I loved his rants and rips and all the references that he would do.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of Dennis Miller where he's showing off.
Yeah.
Showing, telling you directly how smart he is, and which I'm not against. Once again, I like Dennis Miller, but Norm Macdonald could show it to you without showing it to you. Like, instead of pulling the thing out of his pocket for funny like Dennis Miller would, showing you that he's got this thing, Norm Macdonald would just let you know he had it in his pocket, you know?
And, you know, I don't know the entirety of Dennis Miller's career. To me, now, he seems more like a rage comedian now. I don't know if he's always been like that, where he uses anger as kind of the...
Yes, that's been his thing. He's gone on rants, right?
Norm Macdonald was more of like a laissez-faire approach. Like, he really didn't care.
He needed
kind
to be
of the vibe there.
Norm Macdonald needed to be leaning against a wall instead of standing up straight when he told his jokes. That was the kind of vibe.
Now that I think about it, I remember seeing a video when the performers kind of started coming out of their shell a little bit last year after all the big shutdowns, and I think it was comedians who really started getting back on the stage first before a lot of the musical performers.
Oh, big time.
And there was a video of Norm Macdonald, who I think it was the Comedy Store or one of those others out there in L.A., and he looked absolutely – he looked like he rolled out of bed. I think he had stains all over his shirt, completely – his hair was all messed up, and –
he was fighting cancer.
It seemed like a bit at the time.
Right.
I thought that it was like, oh, it's, you know, Norm, he doesn't care showing up like this, stains all over. It must be a bit he's doing. Looking back now, you know, maybe he was fighting this thing, and that was kind of part of the reason that he looked so unkempt.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, somebody texted Norm was better Burt Reynolds than Burt Reynolds, which is good. Oh, my gosh. There's
Yeah, this one texter said, Norm interviews Dangerfield is a classic. That's one I have not seen, Norm Macdonald interviewing Rodney Dangerfield.
And Rodney Dangerfield was a really great comic. I mean, we get this idea of him from Caddyshack and nothing beyond Caddyshack. His stand-up was good.
Yeah.
Nightclub scene stuff was good. All right. Well, this is sad news here. Norm Macdonald dies at age 61. And, yes, let me say the cliche thing. Oh, my gosh, how young.
Yeah.
How young. We'll talk more about Norm Macdonald, I'm sure, in the days to come. And because I think what we'll get is a lot of the comedy, the top of the comedy game will be coming out, making their commentary on
no doubt about
the passing of Norm Macdonald. All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, we just spent the news update listening to Norm Macdonald's logic joke. Classic one. Don't you see this on the Twitter feed? Jeff says, not Jeff Bohr, other Jeff says, one of the last quips from Norm Macdonald after the death of Charles Manson. I'd like to extend my condolences to the Manson family. Jesus. Norm Macdonald, dead, age 61. Brought a lot of joy to a lot of folks out there. All right, a couple stories got to finish up here before tomorrow. I want to circle back, right? Isn't that what Jen, I keep doing that. People say that's what Jen Psaki, the Biden's press secretary, says. It's also what John Hyatt said in a song well before Jen Psaki was around, so I'm good with it. Remember the story from, I think it was LaPlace or somewhere, Avery Estate, Slidell, Louisiana, in the parish over there in St. Bernard. The story we had after Ida of the elderly couple that stayed there and the woman was there and the husband went to look for something in the yard or something to that estate, to that extent. He was outside in the floodwater and they said a gator caught him and everybody's like, hey, really? Listen to this. Update from the Sun Herald, okay? A massive alligator suspected of attacking and killing a man as he waded through floodwaters caused by Hurricane Ida has been caught, according to officials in southeast Louisiana. Authorities trapped the animal, the scaly beast measuring 12 feet and weighing 504 pounds, as of Monday morning in the area of Avery Estates in Slidell, where, would that be St. Tammany? Slidell's in, I thought that was St. Bernard, maybe not. Maybe that's in, it says St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office wrote on Facebook, nuisance hunters and agents with the U.S. and Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries also helped in the capture. Once caught, the gator was found to have what, quote, appears to be human remains, end quote, in its gut, according to deputies. Officials had spotted the gator in a waterway near where it's believed to have attacked and apparently killed 71-year-old Timothy Satterley Sr. last month, a day after Hurricane Ida ripped through the region. Satterley's wife said she was in her home when she heard a commotion outside. Citing a police report, they said she ran outside to find a large alligator attacking her husband and tried wrestling him from the grips of the animal's jaws. She pulled him from the water and onto the front steps of her home, where she left him and went to seek help. When she returned, he was gone. A quote here from St. Tammany Parish Sheriff Randy Smith said, this is a horrible tragedy, and my sincere condolences and sympathies go to the Satterley family. I know today's findings do not bring their loved one back, but hopefully this can bring some sort of closure. Parish Coroner's Office will determine if the remains found of the alligator are Satterley's. We will continue to keep them in our prayers. There's a whole other story is, what if it comes back that it's not? You know, that it's somebody else. But remember that story, right? And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that often doesn't, like you report the initial story and then you don't get, we got more information on that one. So that is it's a sad story there. We'll watch that and see when they do the DNA test, but that could very well have been what happened to the guy. The story, I mean, the story seemed, you know, when people saw it, like, really, did that really happen? Well, it looks like they're saying it really did happen until we find out otherwise. Also, well, we'll do it tomorrow. Another story about an alligator in South Carolina that they trapped, and it brings two things that are interesting to me, alligators and Indian artifacts. They find arrowheads and Indian artifacts in a gator that's been... how it gets, okay, wait, just quickly here with the story, because I don't know how it gets hold of the Indian artifacts. So they're saying, let's see here, where's the latest update? They've updated the story again on us. All right. Where's the new update? Why must they do this to me? Why must they do that? Do they not know that I'm trying to run a radio show and they shouldn't move things on me like that? Let's see. All right, we'll get it tomorrow because I don't know where it went. But there's so Google it yourself, check it out, and we'll go from there. I don't know. Again, I get stuff that I think's supposed to be there and that it's not. All right. Oh, good. John Hyatt. All right. We'll let John take us to the news and then the Paul Feinbaum show on the way. Talk to y'all tomorrow. Have a great one.
Drove that wagon train out west, right along this interstate. Crossed the high plains of Kansas to the Colorado line. Spent a lot of sleepless nights round the campfire.